This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Junkies and flunkies. Oh, yeah. Oh, I had to bring out the Macho Man tonight. Welcome to NWA Saturday Special. Wow, another week in the books already. Even though we're going through this nightmare in this country, or this world, I shouldn't even just say this country, it's actually going pretty fast. This was actually a very fast week. I'm Dr. G. George Robolino, and I'll bring in my co-host, calls himself the PTB Podfather, Mr. Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
I figured at this point, since I've been calling you Dr. G for like, I don't know, 20-something years, that you'd actually remember to say that instead of your real name, like you're on some public service pod.
Well, first of all, I don't always call you Scott in our real lives all the time, so I have to call you Scott Criscolo.
Well, you call me by my because we don't want to call me by the nickname your goddaughter gives me, because then people would think that we're, you know, smoking weed or something. Hey, Solo, Han Solo. Hey, anyway, Dr. G. Hey, what's going on? And see, you respected the flunkies this week.
I disrespected the flunkies, but I respected the junkies.
See, I respect the flunkies. You respect the junkies.
That's right, baby.
Is that how we do that?
This is how we do it.
Anyway, hi, everybody. We're done. Good night.
See you later, bye.
See you later, bye. No, welcome to this week's episode of the Saturday Special. It was a fast week. It's actually been a fast first month of 2021. The fourth weekend of the month. The Royal Rumble is next weekend, the first pay-per-view of 2021.
Feels like just a continuation of 2020, to be honest.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You know, world leaders blow. Just a different group of people think they blow now. But anyway, but that's okay. We talk wrestling makes the heart grow fonder. That's what I always say.
Right. Well, we know what? We need some, like, crowds and some regular wrestling going on here.
I've had enough of that sooner than better than later. I have a feeling we're gonna get to that sooner rather than later. But
well, it sounds like WrestleMania will have some fans, so that's a good thing.
Yes, WrestleMania is going to be the second weekend in April this year. They're still going to do 2 days, Saturday the 10th and Sunday the 11th.
Well, they picked Florida for a reason, because Florida's open. So
yeah, or I'm sorry, is it the 9th and 10th or 10th and 11th? I don't know now. I think it's the 9th and 10th. Can I click the little
Yeah, I don't remember, to be honest with you. I think it's 10th and 11th, but I don't know.
I don't remember. In any event. Here we go. I had to wait for the calendar to open. Let's see here. It is the 10th and 11th. So it's Saturday the 10th and Sunday the 11th of April. It's WrestleMania this year from Raymond James Stadium in Tampa. I'm excited. I will not be going this year. Work precludes it. But next year, WrestleMania, I guess, what is it, 38, I guess, is next year's, I think? Yeah, because WrestleMania 35 was MetLife, and then last year's 36. So next year, WrestleMania 38 is going to be down in Jerry's house, AT&T Stadium in Arlington.
Now, it would be interesting to see, will we be able to have regular crowds by then? I hope
Well, by 2022, if not, then wrestling is the least of our problems.
Yes.
In any event, that's WWE talk. Speaking of, let's talk a little bit about the PTB Wrestling Network. We had a little schedule change this week. If you noticed on the feed, there was not an episode of Main Event. Main Event did not happen this week. Poor Steve Willie had a water issue in the Willie compound. So he had to take care of some. Yeah. So we will be back. We will do, and you know what we do when we have to miss a week? Back-to-back weeks of main events. So next Friday, will be an episode of main event, which will drop on the same day as NWA Croc and Roll. So the heavyweights will be dropping on the same day next Friday, and then we'll do.
Oh, I gotta hear your voice twice. Oh, Jesus, poor.
That's what next weekend? Well, no, I'm not on Croc and Roll next week. You mean like next weekend? Well, yeah. Well, it happens every weekend, I guess, or every other weekend, I suppose. And then we will have a.
Well, I meant with the main event 2 weeks in a row, and then
oh, 2 weeks in a row, not a big deal. Come on, they listen to me weekly on. They listen to me weekly on this show, so
that's true.
Makes the but any event,
Rock and Roll baby. Let me tell you, ooh, it's gonna start heating up.
It is. So check it out. New episode next Friday. But yeah, so main event will be back to back weeks. I just wanted to let everybody know, schedule wise. So anyway, that's it for the PTB Wrestling Network. All the great shows there. Great shows on the Pop Experience, the Jenny Position, and of course,
rate, review, and subscribe, baby, to the PTB Wrestling Network.
Absolutely. All right. So pretty brisk show tonight. Not a lot of news to talk about. Not a lot of NWA news, which is sad, but, you know, I think things will pick up as the year progresses. But no real big news at the moment. I did want to mention, though, Dr. G, before we get into our this week's 10 matches on our GWCW ballot, I wanted to pay tribute. We're going to go out of wrestling for the moment. Today, Friday, as we're recording, we lost one of the great legends of Major League Baseball. Some people consider him still the rightful number one home run hitter of all time. Others consider him number two statistically. Hammer and Hank Aaron, one of the greats.
He's number one to me, but.
Yeah, I kind of think that way, too. And I like people starting fights with me about that because. I know I'm right. Anyway, he passed away on Friday at the age of 86. A great career, played in Milwaukee, played in Atlanta. He was a Brave his whole career.
Seems sudden. I didn't realize he was sick.
I didn't either. But last year or earlier, no, I guess it was last year. He, you know, my client, the CBS Sports Network, did something called the Musial Awards, which is an award, given out to like, you know, great athletes in the high school or college or whatever, you know, marks of sportsmanship and that kind of thing. And Bob Costas interviewed him at the end and he seemed fine. Again, he's older. He was 86 when he passed away, but he seemed fine. But in any event,
it's a sad day for the baseball world. Sad day, obviously, for his family. That home run, you know, to break the record. I mean, it's one of those, you know, we obviously, I mean, I didn't see it live, obviously, because
we were a year old or a year and a half old at the time.
So, but, you know, I've seen it on TV so many times. You've seen it on different shows and, you know, you see the fan running on the field, you know, when he's circling the bases, you know, you always have those images, but it really truly was a spectacular day for baseball. And listen, records are meant to be broken. A lot of guys, you know, it's and to have someone like Hank Aaron to break that record, you know, he always carried himself with class on and off the field.
He did. Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things where maybe he doesn't, I don't want to say he doesn't get the respect that he deserves, but I mean, I think once Bonds passed it, you didn't hear his name mentioned that as much anymore, which was kind of sad because, you know, he really was a great player. And he played many years. Was it 24 years, I think?
More than that, because he actually has the all-time record of 25 All-Star games. So I think he played.
So it's even longer than that. Yeah. Okay.
So, don't forget. Well, don't forget, there were years where there were two All-Star games. So right. So he probably played like 19 years, probably. Let's bring up the wiki.
But, you know, the one thing about Hank Aaron is that he again, just always up there at the top in the home run leaders. You know, again, sometimes he got overshadowed by other players in his era. You know, like, you know, everybody always talks, you know, because he did play during the era of Willie Mays.
Mm-hmm. And Mickey Mantle.
Even Mickey Mantle. And Duke Snider. So sometimes, you know, he kind of got overshadowed because, you know, he had obviously some big years, but he was very consistent.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that because that means he's consistently at the top of his game. You know, he didn't really, I mean, maybe towards the end, but he didn't have a lot of peaks and valleys. He was just a consistent, great ball player.
Right. And Today, I was looking at some stuff and watching things on CBS and on ESPN. I didn't realize, on top of the fact he's second in home runs, still is all time in RBIs, 2,297. Do you realize he is third in hits? 3,771 career hits. That's amazing.
Funny. I did not know that, you know, because, again, he's known for being the home. He was known for being the home run leader.
Now, how about this for a shock? Home run hitter. What do you think his lifetime batting average was?
Like 304, 305 maybe?
305. He was a 305 lifetime hitter and 755 home runs.
He was just a great ball player.
He won two batting
titles. But it's so funny. He because of his you know, where he played, but also, like, you just didn't really – unfortunately, he kind of got overshadowed in his period of time, which that's why it was so nice when he did hit the record-breaking home run. That was him. You know, truly, I think that's when people really celebrated his career. Yep. And really he got the due that he deserved.
Yep, absolutely. He was a 25-time All-Star from 1955 to 1975. He had one World Series, 57. He beat you guys. That was... Wasn't that the year that Joe Torre's brother Frank hit the home run? I think it was. He won the league MVP. He only won one MVP. Isn't that crazy? One MVP, 1957. Three Gold Gloves. He won two batting titles. He only led the league in homers four times.
So consistent.
Absolutely. And, of course, he was on the All-Century team. But he played for the Indianapolis Clowns of the Negro Leagues. He played for the Braves organization for 20 years, from 1954 to 1974. Of course, they went from Milwaukee to Atlanta. And then he played his last 2 years. He went back to Milwaukee and played 2 years with the Brewers. So that was his career. Anyway, I'm sorry, you had a point.
No, I just, again, it just shows you that he just put together season after season of just great numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. You know, yeah, he only won one MVP award. Remember, he also didn't play for, you know, he won one World Series. So he didn't play for spectacular teams either. So.
No.
In the
markets,
some
years
played,
the Braves
you know,
were not good.
He was in Milwaukee and Atlanta. So think about if he played in New York or even L.A.
Like Willie Willie. And because when they talk about, and he wasn't a center fielder, but when you talk about, you know, Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. And you don't talk about guys like Hank Aaron and Harmon Killebrew and some of those other amazing mashing outfielders from the 50s, 60s into the 70s.
And you got to understand, in those days, remember, you didn't have – I mean, just think if he had numbers like this today. I mean, just because the way the world is now and, you know, with social media and all the media in general, the 24/7 media – they didn't have that in their day. So when you really stood out, when you were a Mickey Mantle and you really, I mean, you know, because the big markets got all the attention and you didn't have all the TV stations you have today and the news, sometimes you didn't find out the news till the next day, you know, what a person did. Yep. So unless you listen to the game on the radio locally. So it was just a different time that he played in, but it doesn't discount what he meant to the game and what he meant to his teams, and just, again, carried himself on and off the field. He was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by
President George W. Bush in, back in 2002.
Yep.
Most well deserved. I mean, it's just a good man, a man that will be missed. Again, all these legends of our, you know, baseball is my favorite sport, and you know, just all these legends over, you know, recently we lost Tommy Lasorda, you know, all these legends that we kind of grew up with. I mean, we didn't totally grow up with Hank Aaron, but you know, he was definitely part of, you know, our lives as baseball fans, and they're gone now, you know, and a lot of them are gone, and it's sad because it's those are the guys that, you know, a lot of those guys carried themselves just in a different classy way. I mean, especially somebody like Hank Aaron, you know, he meant a lot to the sport, and again, he'll be missed. And, you know, just the last like year and a half, it just sucks. For many different reasons. I mean, he did live a nice life, but still, you know, it's just one of those guys that you always remember bringing it every day, and also, you know, on and off the field, always treating the game with respect and treating others with respect.
Yep, absolutely. The year that now here's a guy that almost won the Triple Crown a couple times. The year that the three times he led the league in both home runs and ribbies. 1957, when he won the MVP, 44 homers, 132 RBIs. He hit .322, didn't win the batting title. 1963, he led the league with both 44 homers and 130 RBIs. He hit .319, didn't win the batting title. And in 1966, the first year that the Braves were in Atlanta, he led the league with 44 homers and 127 runs batted in, and he hit .27.
What was the most home runs he had in the season? Was it like 49 or something like that?
47.
47.
1971 for the Braves. He had 47 homers and 118 RBI.
Like I said, he was just consistent. He put up big numbers every year. He didn't put up – like he didn't have those years where he had 50 or 60 home runs. But right. He consistently put up between 35 and 45 home runs a year.
Yep. This is where from 54 to 76, this is where his home run totals. 13, 27, 26, 44, 30, 39, 40, 34, 45, 44, 24. I think he only played 145. Yeah. 32, 44, 39, 29, 44, 38, 47, 34, 40, 20, and then, of course, his career tailed off at the end, 12 and 10 for a total of 755. So he averaged 37 home runs in his 23 years in the league.
Yeah, I mean, that's just...
So, there you go.
That's just good, consistent baseball.
And guy who didn't strike out a lot. The most strikeouts he had in a season was 97. In 1960.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Struck out 97 times. Didn't walk a ton. He never reached 100 walks in a season. I think the most walks he had were 92 in 1970.
That's amazing because he didn't strike out a lot.
But he made contact, and that's why he made contact. So
but you know, it's like they didn't pitch around. You know, the pitchers were different then. They just challenge you because
You had guys like Bob Gibson, Juan Marichal. You had guys that were like, fuck this shit. I'm not nibbling. Who the hell nibbles? What am I, Phil Negro? Who passed away also in 2020. But like you had guys like that, Juan Marichal and Bob Gibson and Seaver and those kind of guys who weren't gonna nibble. They were gonna, you know what? Hall of Famer for Hall of Famer. I'm gonna throw you my best stuff. If you hit it, all the power to you. That's how it was back then. You know what I'm saying?
You name those stats and it's like nothing comes out glaring. The only thing that's truly glaring is that just how consistent he was for 23 seasons. Yep. I mean, yeah, he had a couple of years towards the end where obviously when you get older, you know, tails off, but it's just, he was just so consistent and, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. He didn't have to be the best player in the league every single year.
Right. No, I
you know, there are just some players that are just consistently good hitters. You know, obviously he was always in the top 5, top 10 every year.
Right.
But I'd rather have his stats, to be honest with you, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I want to go to his – we will get to wrestling. And as a matter of fact, this is kind of correlated because on the 20th ever, they did the, what, 20 years of – not Saturday's main event. 20 years of TBS with wrestling or whatever. I think it was the – what was it? The 15th Clash of the Champions or 20th Clash of the Champions. Hank Aaron was on. So obviously he's very close to TBS because of his team, the Braves. All teams. I just want to look at the records because we talk about guys who went through some pretty horrendous seasons. I want to look at their records. Here we go. All right. So 1954. This was their records. Starting in 1954, they won 89 games. 85 games, 92 games, 95 games in 57. That's when they won the World Series against the Yankees. 92 games in 58. They lost to... Did you guys beat them in 58? I don't remember. Let me see. Yes, you did. So you guys faced each other back-to-back years, 57 and 58. They beat you in 57. You beat them in 58. They won 86 games, 88, 83, 86, 84, 88, 86, 85. For the first time in his career in 67, they finished below 500. Then 500 even, 81 and 81. Then they won 93 games the first year of divisional play. And, of course, they got swept by the Mets in the playoffs. Under 570, then 82, 70, 70. So as he got older, the Braves really started to suck.
You know what's 70s. Funny, though, when you think about it, I didn't realize. I mean, obviously his team wasn't spectacular, but they weren't as bad as I thought. So they were pretty consistent. Like I said, he didn't – it took many years in his career before he had, like, a losing record on a team. So – but again, he was in Milwaukee and then Atlanta – and in those days, you know, the guys in the bigger markets are who got most of the attention. Like you said, I mean, nobody, you know how many people, if you said Harmon Killebrew, they may not even know who you're talking about. And Harmon Killebrew was a great player.
Yeah, he was.
Yep. But he played for the Twins, you know. And in those days, you know, even now, even though, you know, the markets say, but now because of all the 24/7 news cycle, you hear about these guys more. You have SportsCenter, you have ESPN. You know, in those days, you didn't have that.
Right.
So I just could imagine if Hank Aaron played in New York. Wow.
Oh, absolutely.
Or Chicago.
Yep.
Wow. I can't even. So L.A., you know, whatever.
That's two legendary Braves that passed away in the last year or so.
Rough year for that organization.
Yeah. So rest in peace, Hank Aaron, the Hammer. You are an all-time great. And again,
no doubt.
I want to look quickly because I want to make sure I get that right. I'm trying to remember which Clash of the Champions he was on because it was like the 20th because it was the last.
I remember it. I could tell you the number or whatever, but I remember him.
Yeah. Well, I remember it because, excuse me, it was also the last TV appearance for Andre before he died. So I think
that had to be like sometime. 94, I believe, right? 93, 94?
I think it was this one. It was this one. Clash of the Champions 20th anniversary, September 2nd, 1992, from the Center Stage Theater in Atlanta. And I remember Hank Aaron was there. They had a bunch of...
Didn't Vince and Andre have a falling out because of that when he...
Yeah, kind of, but Andre was retired by then. I don't think Vince really cared at this point, nor should he have. But I'm pretty sure Hank Aaron was on screen for that. The main event of that show was a 4-on-4 elimination match. Maybe it's on my list, on the list. Rick Rude, Jake Roberts, Super Invader, and Big Van Vader defeated Sting, Nikita Koloff, and the Steiners.
Well, I did say on Crock and Roll, the last Crock and Roll, which people will hear, that you and I definitely will be fighting because, you know, we picked the matches, but I let you number them. So I said, yeah, well, definitely as the numbers, we get into the lower numbers. You know, towards the end of it, we'll definitely be fighting on who's, you know, where the placement was.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the fun of it.
That's the exciting part. Right now, it's a little tough because you know the 90s, 80s. Oh, you know,
Steve Austin lost the WCW World TV title in a no disqualification match on this show. You know who beat him? Ricky Steamboat.
Interesting. Who?
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Fucking scrubs. Anyway,
I just love getting you going.
But in this instance, that you guys totally sound like morons.
Ricky Steamboat. Now, do I think that, you know, and we'll, again, I don't want to get into this debate now, but do I think that the Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Randy Savage match is the number one match in WWE history? No, but well, it's up there.
PlayStation.com composite. The composite list did not have it number one. It had it number three. I had it number one.
It's definitely in the top five, but I don't have it as number one, though.
Anyway, all right.
You know, but the thing is that, yeah, maybe at that time, when after it happened, you could say, yeah, because that match was just phenomenal. Well, but you've had some better stuff since then. And in my mind, it doesn't mean other people disagree. But, yeah, I mean, I don't dislike Ricky Steamboat at all. I mean, he's you know, phenomenal wrestler.
Right.
Maybe he didn't have the charisma, but he definitely could wrestle anybody in the ring.
Yeah. But anyway, we had a big talk about Steamboat last week. But there'll be a ton of Steamboat still on our GWCW ballot. We'll see if we see them. We'll see if we see him tonight. For tonight,
have you announced the project for this year yet?
We have not.
Oh boy. You don't realize the back and forth and the meetings. Normally they would have it at, like, you know, in a boardroom, but because now we have, you know, social distancing, so now it's got to be on Zoom.
Yeah,
yeah, but big time stuff going on here.
Yeah, no, I think people will enjoy this year's.
Oh, so you kind of know already.
We kind of have an idea, but we haven't made the full announcement yet.
Who's like the deciding vote on this? Like, you know, how does, you know, when the board of directors get together, how's this all work?
We leave it up to Jim Barnett. No, I don't know. I don't know. But,
oh, my boy.
Anyway. So tonight, we will continue counting down the doctors in my top 100 GWCW matches. 20 matches are down, 80 to go. So tonight we will count down numbers 80 to 71. And we got some good ones on here. That I think you'll like. And ones we particularly talked about a lot. I'm not going to recap the previous matches. You can go to the last two episodes and check.
That's right.
All right.
Download it, baby.
Now, at number 80 is a match that I know for a fact I added, and I don't even think you even know this match. As is pretty comfortable to tell all of you, Dr. G and I are a bigger fan of the 80s and early 90s NWA, WCW than we are the Nitro era. But that doesn't mean we have any disrespect for good matches that occurred between 1995 and 2001. Not at all. Here's one of them. And this one I know for a fact you've probably never seen. I'd never saw it till it was on the WWE Network, believe it or not. We're going to go to the New Blood Rising pay-per-view that took place in 2000. And we are going to talk a little cruiserweights again. And a bunch of guys who would eventually make it even just as big in WWE. The New Blood Rising pay-per-view took place on August 13th. Of 2000 from the Pacific Coliseum in Vancouver. The match? Three Count and the Jung Dragons. Yes.
About this match because, you know, I do listen to other podcasts and other things I see. Yep, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It
here.
Was a ladder match.
I have not seen it, though.
It's a ladder match for a gold record. How about that, huh?
Yeah.
Three Count was Evan Courageous, Shannon Moore, and Hurricane Shane Helms against the Jung Dragons, who consisted of Kaz Hayashi, legendary All Japan wrestler, Jamie Noble, at the time he was Jamie-san, but Jamie Noble, who was a producer in WWE, and Yun Yang, who is, of course, the former Jimmy.
Was Russo Bang there at the time? That was when Russo was. Yeah, that's why they have this. Everything was on a pole. Everything. I mean,
yep, everything's on a pole, a flatbed, a truck, stuff. A unicycle, a rickshaw. He
Vince to be his editor, let me tell you.
Yep. But this is a match that I think you need to watch because there, you know, the last 2.5 years of WCW, 99, 2000, and of course the beginning of 2001, had a ton of garbage. I think that's pretty clear because one company won the war and one company didn't. But there are some rare gems that I think in that those 2.5 years of WCW,
the Cruiserweights really usually had some good matches during that time.
And this is a match. It's you know, a lot of moving around, a lot of jumping. Of course, a good number of these guys would make would continue to have a great career, whether it was in TNA or of course in WWE. I think they all won the Cruiserweight title at least once, the whole bunch. Maybe not Shannon Moore. Definitely Shane Helms. Definitely Jamie Noble. And definitely Jimmy Wang Yang. They each had it at least once. So all good workers and a fun. It's the opener of the show. The rest of the show leaves a little bit to be desired. But this was a good
opener. It's funny because, Bischoff did come back, but I don't think he came back at that point in time. He did come back sometime in 2000 after they let him go.
When they rebooted the belts.
He did take the Bischoff plan of – Bischoff always loved to start the shows off with the cruiserweights to get the crowd hopped up and start the show off hot. And even though Russo and Bischoff never saw eye to eye, I guess in this aspect he kind of – that's something he kept because that does get the show going at that time. I do agree that during the WCW Nitro era, there were a lot of great cruiserweight matches. If that's the stuff you really enjoy. Remember, for that time, some of the stuff they were doing was kind of innovative or you didn't see in America as much. So I think, that's something that, that set them apart from the WWE at that time.
Right, exactly. And the thing was by 2000, and I just watched Backlash the other day. Obviously, the WWF roster started to catch up because obviously, a lot of those guys, those mid-card guys like Benoit and Jericho and Malenko, and then migrated to WWF because they thought they were being disrespected. But the Cruiser guys, because the light heavyweight division till Dean got there was pretty much Gilbert holding the belt for a year and then you never fucking saw him. So the cruiserweights were probably smart to at least stay in WCW for a while till the writing was on the wall. And I would even think probably I think there were rumblings even in the summer of 2000 that WCW was going to get sold. But that's a whole other story for another day. By the way, if you have never read it, The Death of WCW by Brian Alvarez is a tremendous book. There's also a book out now called Nitro. About the rise and fall of WCW. Fantastic book that I've heard. I own it, but I haven't read it yet. I got it as a Secret Santa gift.
Who's the one that wrote that one, The Rise and Fall of WCW?
This one here? While you're analyzing the next match, I'll go grab it. Breaking the fourth wall again. So at number 80 on our list, from the New Blood Rising pay-per-view from August of 2000, it is the 3 count against the Jung Dragons in gold record on a pole match. Interesting, huh?
Nice.
At number 79 is a match that I always enjoyed and you enjoy too because it's got the good old-fashioned heel turns in it. From Halloween Havoc 1995, it is Ric Flair and Sting versus Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. This is a fun back-and-forth throwdown. That, of course, eventually led to Flair turning on Sting because everybody did back then.
I know.
But, again, this was part of that great, unique, like, Arn-Flair feud in 95.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
That was great. They had a great pay-per-view match, which we'll talk about a few weeks down the line on this list.
I believe that is the only time from, listening to Arn on his podcast, which, again, not many podcasts that I do listen to. I've cut down on who I'm listening to and stuff lately, but I love Arn. Of course, I mark out for him on NWA Crock and Roll, and I just love listening to his stories and how he goes about it. But I believe that is the only time that he actually had a world title match.
Mm.
And I know he really...
Flair wasn't the champion in that match.
Well, he did have a world title match. Now I don't know what it is now. See, I'm speaking out of turn here, but I know he had a championship
match.
I'm sure
he had a world title match. It wasn't that one, though. The match we're talking about, we won't spoil it, but the match we're talking about is later on down on the list somewhere. But no, because when that was going on, it was actually that night, Halloween Havoc 95, Hogan lost the title to the Giant. So Hogan was
right.
Champion.
That's right. You're right. Yeah, you're right. So no, I thought that he faced Flair for the title at one time, but maybe not. I know he only had like one time that he got a world title match, but all right, I'm mistaken. So I
hate Arn definitely. Oh, I'm sure Arn had a title match, and I don't think it was with Flair, but in any event.
But I remember the fact that those two going against each other was pretty big for that time. Cause you know, everybody thought, you know, Horsemen, they're so tight. But you know, you kind of saw it coming in that tag team match. Like, okay, yeah, Flair's going to turn on Sting, you know, it wasn't too shocking. Let's put it
no,
that
it
way.
It wasn't. No, not at all.
But you're right. Poor Sting, you know, he just had that period of time.
That always happened. Why do you trust?
But I do remember that match. I got to go back and watch that one again because that's
it's a fun tag and it's got good workers and that was when
anytime I get to watch Arn, I'm really marking out for him. I guess I just didn't realize because he didn't have, you know, at that time in the 80s we were so into I mean, no, we're talking about the 90s now, but I'm just saying when Arn was really at his, you know, starting out with the Horsemen and everything, because at that time, you know, we were like all into the baby faces, but you didn't realize, but I'm just gaining such a respect for him that I think Arn is right up there. I said it in the show and I'm going to take some flack. He's right up there with Flair, let me tell you, when it comes to doing interviews and when it comes to, you know, obviously he's not the wrestler that Flair is, but he's right there. I mean, he's, you know, Flair's like a one and he's like a 1A or, you know, even two, if you want to go that route. But Arn was just on. I mean, just the things he would come out with, and he's just so dry about it. And so like you never felt Arn even, you know, and he was young in his wrestling career at this time. And back in the 80s, you never felt like he was never nervous. You never got a nervous feeling. Like he knew what he wanted to say. He knew what he wanted to get out there. And he did it very, very well. And he was a great heel. Like Arn is just not a babyface. Arn is a heel. And he's a great heel.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Tully, too. Tully was awesome, too. I mean,
Tully was never going to be a babyface. He's just too smart.
Tully was right there with him. But I just think Tully, that's just Tully's personality in general. Right. Right. But I don't know. You go back and you watch a lot. You've been watching a lot of stuff. I mean, yeah, you've had to gain even more. I know you always loved Arn, but you had to even gain more of a respect for him and just say.
Oh, I agree. You know, absolutely.
I mean, his interviews are just phenomenal.
Yeah.
When he came out with the fedora, we were just talking about in the last with the freaking so only he could pull up the fedora with the no shirt and the wrestling tights. I mean,
that's so great. Or he wore a Yankee hat. That was even better. Yankee hat.
Oh, yeah.
With the Southern
and he
crowd.
Said he did it just to piss people off. He loved
it.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. anyway, at number 79, a great tag, a fantastic tag with four expert workers from Halloween Havoc 1995. It is Ric Flair and Sting versus Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. This next match is four phenomenal workers. And I know for a fact you and I have watched this match, and I think we need to watch it again. From Super Brawl 2, which is 1992, so we know how great that year was in wrestling, from Super Brawl 2, the team of, pretty solid tag here, Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes against Steve Austin and Larry Legend, Larry Zbyszko. So we were, of course, in the middle of the tremendously awesome tag team, of the tremendously awesome heel faction known as the Dangerous Alliance. So,
you know, which was only together like 4 or 5 months, but it felt longer.
Well, because it's so awesome. Of course, the main event on this show is when Sting beat Luger for the world title. And then, of course, eventually we would see Luger in the, well, WBF before he would spring up in the WWF.
Quote unquote, the WBF.
WBF. We might be getting a WBF podcast, just to let you know. There's discussions, just letting you know. You would love that, wouldn't
is
you?
Is that on the Pop Experience?
Is it, no, it's not the Pop, I know, right? I can't, I can't, because it may, the minimum pod length may not be 3.5 hours, but no, I'm okay. Anyway, right. So, tremendous tag match. Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes against Steve Austin and Larry Zbyszko. An incredibly fun tag. Once again, awesome workers back and forth in a match that's a skoosh under 20 minutes, 18:23. And you've got another good tag match on this card that we might see later on. Arn and Bobby Eaton, who were the tag champs against the Steiners.
Yeah, Arn and Bobby, you know, I'll tell you the truth, Bobby Eaton was just as good of a partner than Tully was. They gelled very well.
Arn is probably, and I mean, as much as we make fun of Billy Gunn, he's a pretty good one too. But Arn Anderson is probably the greatest tag team worker of all time. No doubt about it. He's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time to begin with.
I still like Arn and Tully better than Arn and Bobby Eaton because Tully had more personality. He was better on the mic, but in terms of getting somebody to, you know, the in ring and the way they work together and their teamwork. I mean, you know, and I know that Arn enjoyed working with Bobby Eaton. So just a good team. And just for that match is just four solid wrestlers, you know, for that time. And I will say this, you know, I don't know if we've ever spoken about this on the podcast, on any podcast. I don't think we have. And I don't even, you know, it's funny that you haven't even touted this on podcast, but it's so funny because Steve Austin became my favorite wrestler, but you always, when we were in school watching this, loved Stone Cold. Well, I wasn't Stone Cold.
Stunning Steve Austin. I absolutely
he was
did.
One of your favorites. I mean, yes, if anything, I know you loved Arn, but I would think that, you know, he kind of overtook Arn for you at that time.
I loved Steve Austin in WCW. Loved him. And if you go back, and I don't have the episode numbers off the top of my head, but go back to the Place to Be podcast archives here on the PTB Wrestling Network. JR and I did a two-part podcast with good old Will and Charles from PWO, and we did a two-part series on 1994 WCW. We did all of the pay-per-views, two-part series, and I loved Steve Austin, and I went crazy for Steve. There was plenty of 1994.
I have to say, and I apologize, but I didn't realize you guys did a podcast on that. But I'll have to go back and actually in the archives and listen to it.
It's a while back. It's a while back, but it was excellent.
It's so funny. In all these podcasts we've been doing and talking about NWA, you never – I figured you would have at least bragged about it because – and even given me some grief over – not that I didn't like – I liked Steve Austin, man. Don't get me wrong, but not like I liked him in WWE. So – but – let me tell you, you were just as into Steve Austin as you were Arn Anderson, Triple H. I mean, you loved Stunning Steve at that time.
That 92 through 94 stretch.
You actually were a little bit more into him in the beginning when he was a heel in WWF than I was.
Yep, I was. I did.
I have to give you credit where credit's due, you know, and you just there was something about, you know, Stunning Steve at the time that you really liked. And I mean, I don't think you thought he was going to become the number one box office attraction in the world.
No,
but
not at all. Absolutely not.
But, you know, it just there was some, you know, again, back that WCW had talent back then. They just didn't know what to do with it. And a matter of fact, going back to Stunning Steve, I mean, I know that even JR bought you the Hollywood Blondes wrestling figures.
Yep. Yep.
The special they put out, WWE put out, it's like 10 years ago, right? I think.
It's that classic series. I think Jack.
Yeah, the classic series. So that's how much you loved.
I did.
That team. I mean, you were more into, to, you know, Steve Austin than Brian Pillman, but you loved, I mean, you just loved Steve Austin. I just had to point that out tonight because you never
love the theme song too.
You never put it, you never have mentioned that, even though we've talked about a lot of that over time. I said, I might as well put it out there for everyone. Just say,
yeah, you know what's funny? When you've done 568 episodes, sometimes episodes kind of come and go. But
on our podcast when we were talking about, you know, Stunning Steve, you didn't go, you never really like told everybody, at least on the podcast I've been with you on, like, you know, that he was your man there for a while. He was the guy that you were really into.
Well, we haven't really gotten into. Well, you know what's funny, G? We really haven't gotten too deep into Austin as much as you think. No, we're going to talk a lot about Austin now, though, between now and when we get to the top of this.
This is a clinic, this match. I mean, and I kind of remember it because I know you and I watched a lot of WCW at that time. I mean, again, these matches, what's fun about when you put this stuff together is that, you know, some of it we did go back and watch, obviously, to put together the list. And then some of it, you know, you did some, I did some, you know, we didn't watch everything. So, you know, we just kind of put it together, you know, based on ourselves. So, but this one, you added. So, so I got to go back and watch this.
Yeah. This is not going to be the last time that we're going to go back to Super Brawl 2, by the way, which took place on Leap Year Day. You don't see that very often. February 29th, 1992. I love the 2-year stretch. 1992, 93, 94, WCW. I love that 2-year stretch of wrestling. It is so damn good. Then Hogan comes in and everything, you know, changes. But but you're going to see, and you've seen it so far here on our ballot, and you're going to see more of it. You're going to see a ton of matches from 92, 93, and 94. On this countdown, because those 3 years, well, 2.5, because, well, you know,
some of the booking wasn't always so great, but the talent was, and the matches were
pretty damn good too. So let's remember that match, and let's remember this card, because this show, because we're going to get back to it. So at number 78 on our list from Super Brawl 2 in February of 1992, Larry Zbysko and Stunning Steve Austin, probably because I had a thing for Lady Blossom and she was hot. Of course, I was Austin's wife at the time, against Dustin Rhodes and Barry Windham. And I got to be honest with you, G, I think a lot of it's Barry Windham, too.
Yeah, you Barry's know? Great. Barry, like everybody says in the industry, when Barry's head was into it and he was one of the top, you know, two or three in the world.
Yep, I agree.
In the 100%. Ring. I mean, he could go with anybody.
Let us go to at number 77. Speaking of Ric Flair and the Dangerous Alliance, we've already we mentioned the rematch that these two had a couple of episodes ago. But on this in this slot is the first time they met. We will go to Fall Brawl 1993 and Rick Rude versus Ric Flair. We won't get too much into this because we talked a lot about these two a couple weeks ago, and we talked about the rematch they had a month later at Halloween Havoc. But this was the first time they wrestled. Again, another indicator of how good Rick Rude was when he got to WCW, and how, and again, JR and I are documenting it on the Place B podcast. His WWF stretch in terms of maybe promos and charisma was really good, but some of his in-ring left a lot to be desired. And I think that once he got to WCW, he kind of figured out the in-ring thing.
I want to say
matches with Flair show that.
First of all, he a lot of times he was working with Ultimate Warrior, so you know.
True, but they did have a great match. But they did have one of my favorite matches ever.
Worked a feud with Jake, and you know you can't tell me that he didn't learn some stuff from Jake.
Yes, I mean the in-ring stuff was not great, but Jake was going through a lot of shit in '88, and you didn't see him on camera as much as you thought you would. Right. But anyway, we already talked about Rude and Flair, so we won't go too deep into it. But check out those two matches back to back. Here at number 77 on our list is Ric Flair versus Rick Rude from Fall Brawl 1993. Their rematch a month later at Halloween Havoc 93, you and I had at number 90. So we had both those matches on our list. At number 76, guess what? Back to the Cruisers. And a very memorable match because it, I believe it was the first match ever on the show. We go to the very first episode of WCW Monday Nitro. September 4th, 1995, from the Mall of America, Jushin Thunder Liger and Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say, and we've talked a lot about, Nate and Steve and I talked a lot about this on the main event last year, in 2020, after last year's Wrestle Kingdom, because, of course, last year's Wrestle Kingdom is when Jushin Liger retired. I think it's pretty safe to say that Jushin Liger is probably the greatest cruiserweight wrestler of all time. And there are a lot of great ones. And I know people are going to tell me about Fujinami, but I always consider Fujinami a heavyweight.
You can't argue with it. Jushin Thunder Liger is kind of the guy who really started that Nitro era of cruiserweights that, you look for, I mean, and then working with Pillman, I mean, that's phenomenal. That's a good match.
It's an amazing match.
That I do remember because I remember watching the first Nitro. So
yes, yep. Trying to remember if that's the Chad JR and Chad would know. Of course, they're documenting that Raw vs. Nitro battle on their great show Wrestling Warzone over on the NoSo. I'm trying to remember if this was the match that Luger walked out in his awesome collarless shirt.
Yeah, that it was the first Nitro he came out on.
Well, I know that was first Nitro. I'm trying to remember if it was this match that he came out on. I don't think so. I think it was another match. But anyway.
Yeah, it was. I think it was another match. I don't remember which one, but
I don't remember which one either, but I know that Justin and Chad would know. You know, anyway. This was great.
You're gonna get the marks out there. I know. How do you not remember that?
Go have some more Mountain Dew. So at number 76 on our list from the inaugural episode of WCW Monday Nitro, September 4th, 1995, Jushin Thunder Liger and Brian Pillman. Sticking with the Cruisers. We go ahead to Uncensored 1997 for our number 75 match. Dean Malenko versus Eddie Guerrero in a no disqualification match.
Yeah. Those two had a lot of matches together.
Yeah, they really did. Their feud that they had in ECW in 1995. Now, let's go back, Dr. G, to our senior year in college. And the summer of 95 when you and I had no jobs. we were a couple of fucking flunkies. We were flunkies and junkies when we got out of college. And we would go to our Saturday night watering hole and imbibe and then come home at 3 o'clock in the morning and watch some ECW on MSG. Watching that feud between Eddie and Dean. And
Eddie didn't he wear that singlet too at that time?
No, he didn't have a singlet. Maybe he did. Well, in ECW,
I don't remember if it was, or maybe that was WCW. I know it was like red. It was like red and white, I think, or something.
Yes, and I love that outfit because I almost wanted to buy it on his figure when we went to that Ring of Honor show. But they had great matches in ECW, and they carried it over to here. That is a fun brawl with two guys going balls to the wall, and it would not be the last. I mean, it won't be the last time, by the way, that we'll have an Eddie Guerrero match or an Eddie Guerrero match in 1997. But this is from Uncensored, Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero in a no disqualification match. That's our match at number 75. So 25 matches down, 75 to go. Not tonight, of course. At number 74. And number 73, let's put these in a package because it's the same two guys, just two different matches. At number 74, we'll go to Super Brawl 3, February 21st, 1993. And at number 73, We'll go to Starrcade 1992. And one of the defining feuds of the early 90s in WCW, Sting and Big Van Vader.
Good matches. You know, those are some of Vader's best matches with Sting. You know that.
Yep, absolutely. And they were the main event. Of course, the match at Super Bowl III was the White Castle of Fear strap match, which is a fun one for me. I always enjoy that one.
I love the things they came up with back then.
Oh, well, it's, you know, what are you going to do? They, now that was, and then a previous at Starrcade 92, which of course was Battle Bowl, but at least the good part about that was Sting and Vader wrestled in the King of Cable tournament final. I don't even think the gimmicks bother me. I just think the fact that that Sting and Vader just worked so well together. So you had the White Castle of Fear match at Super Brawl 3 and then the King of Cable match at Starrcade 1992. What was it about Sting and Vader, Dr. G? Is it, I mean, when Vader was in his prime, he reminds me a lot of Yokozuna. In the sense that here's a guy that's, you know, close to, I mean, he's got to be close to 500 pounds. I mean, probably like 450. But man, could he move. He could move. He could.
And I think at that time he was a little lighter, but, you know, than that. But no, Vader could move. It's weird because I don't know what really clicked between Vader and Sting. Maybe, you know, they just, you know, some people just have a good chemistry and they did. And, you know, I think Sting liked the fact I think Vader liked the fact that he could work with Sting, did a little bit of the Vader didn't just do all power moves. He was able to show, you know, because, again, he could move for his size at that time. But also, I think Sting liked because there was some brawling and Sting could do a little bit of that brawling, you know, a little, kind of do something a little different, you know, because, you know, when Sting was wrestling Flair, it was a little bit more of a, I don't want to say scientific, it wasn't totally scientific, but it was more than when he's wrestling Vader. Mm-hmm. But Vader had that, when his matches with Vader had that good mixture, and I think, like, Sting liked, you know, I think Sting liked to bring it a little bit, you know, like, you could get a little stiff with each other, and I don't know. Vader brought something out in Sting. He kind of brought out a little killer instinct in Sting. I agree with you on that.
That's actually a good point. I agree with you on that about bringing Sting. I always compare Sting.
Sting could actually almost wrestle. I don't want to say wrestle like a heel, but he could. He doesn't have to be a total baby face. He could kind of show a mean streak in him.
You know what? You know who Sting, if you want to talk about modern wrestlers, you know who Sting always reminds me of in terms of how his personality is and how he is with the crowd and everything. You know, Sting reminds me of John Cena. Yeah. That same kind of guy who the crowd loves him. It's hard to boo Sting, but when Sting needs to kind of roll his sleeves up and get in the dirt, he'll do it.
Yeah.
And I feel like the match we have earlier in our countdown that you and I watched, the match he had with Flair on that August 93 Saturday night. He got a little in the dirt with Sting, with Flair.
Yeah.
So
you know what it is? Sting is one of those guys where, you know, if you look on paper, like at that match with Vader, you'd be like, I don't know. How good is that going to be? And then they shocked you in how well they worked together. And right. I think Sting really, every once in a while, wanted to do something a little different. And, you know, I think he really, I know he was a heel earlier in his career, but for the most part, he most of his career, he's been a face.
Right.
And I think that this really, these matches showed another side. Like I said, just a little, shows his mean streak a little bit. You know, Vader brought a lot out of him, and I think I've heard an interview somewhere where he did mention that Vader made him, you know, like he felt one of those matches with Vader kind of took him to another level, you know, showed a little mean streak that
that he always wanted to portray in the ring.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. So back-to-back slots, the Doctor and I have at numbers 74 and 73. We have a couple of Vader Sting matches. At number 74, the White Castle of Fear match from Super Brawl 3. And at number 73, the King of Cable final from Starrcade 1992. By the way, we're going to go back to Starrcade 1992 for our next match. At number 72 on our list, how about this tag from Starrcade 1992, Shane Douglas and Ricky Steamboat versus Barry Windham and Brian Pillman.
Again, for solid, you know, great guys in the ring here. You know, wasn't that team of Shane Douglas and Ricky Steamboat kind of just like, it felt like it was just thrown together, but you know, they actually did pretty well together, I thought, as a tag team.
Well, they were combining the NWA and WCW tag belts.
Oh, yep.
And, but again, Brian Pillman was a guy who was a great cruiser worker. And, you know, we've talked about Brian a lot and not the last time we'll see Brian. But Barry Windham, I think, elevated him in that mid to late 92, you know, into 93.
You know? I agree. And, you know, Pillman, you know, it's so funny when you watch him back in the early days of WCW and then, then when he became the Loose Cannon, it was like two different guys. It was like really weird. Like, would you have ever predicted when you watched him coming out with his little bangle tights that this was going to be a guy that was going to be, you know, kind of maniacal and, you know, unpredictable? Like, I didn't get that. Now, maybe people that knew him backstage and the way he was as a person behind the might say, oh, no, this is not really too far off. He was portrayed as a babyface at the time. You know, I would have never guessed that he'd become the character that he wound up becoming. And, but again, Force, I mean, come on, you cannot beat. I mean, probably the one guy in the ring that probably had the least skills of all four is Shane Douglas, and you know Shane was not a bad worker. So
no, not at all.
That just shows you how good the other three are.
Yep.
That's I do remember when we were going through and picking these matches that this one was a good one.
Yeah, it's a great one. You and I think need to watch. We watched a decent amount of these matches, but they're always worth watching again. So at number 72, we'll go to Starrcade 1992, and the NWA WCW combo, or I guess unification tag title match, Shane Douglas and Ricky Steamboat versus Barry Windham and Brian Pillman. And finally, our final match of the night, our 10th and final match of the night, number 71, we go 3 years earlier to Starrcade 1989. And Starrcade. And there's better match. We have better matches between these two further on the list, but this one's pretty good where it is. Sting, again, and the Great Muta.
Yeah, that they had a good feud, too, back in that time.
Yeah, they did.
Again, another guy that brought out a little bit of something in Sting that really, you know, Flair obviously was the guy that really brought Sting out to the forefront. But guys like Great Muta, I think, again, helped elevate Sting, because great Muta could go, let me tell you. I mean, you, I'm sure, you know, we've seen a lot of matches over the years with him. So, you know, you forget, like, I mean, Sting really, I mean, I during that period of time, you had Sting, Flair, you had Muta, you know, Muta and Sting, and then Vader and Sting. I mean, just three great opponents for him that really, I think, help make the legend of Sting grow throughout the years.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And Muta, of course, him and Muta would have a great feud throughout 89. Not the last Muta match we will have by any stretch. As you've probably heard us talk about on the main event, I am a huge Muta fan. I'm also a big Chono fan. If we're talking
Muta
about
was what, television guys. Champion, correct?
No, he was U.S. champion.
U.S. champion?
Okay. U.S. champion, yep. That was the feud that him and Sting were having while Flair was feuding with Funk. That was that whole stable with, Gary Hart.
And I knew it was one of the secondary belts. I just couldn't remember if it was the U.S. or television belt.
So there's our matches. There's our 10 matches for tonight. Let's recap very quickly and see if any of these strike your fancy. At number 80.
This is when you get your little newscaster.
I know, my little newscaster voice. 9 minutes and 60 seconds. At number 80 from New Blood Rising 2000, three count versus the Jung Dragons in the gold record on a pole. At number 79 from Halloween Havoc 1995, Ric Flair and Sting versus Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. At number 78 from Super Brawl 2, Larry Zbysko and Steve Austin versus Dustin Rhodes and Barry Windham. At number 77 from Fall Brawl 1993, Ric Flair versus Rick Rude. At number 76 from the inaugural episode of WCW Monday Nitro, September 4th, 1995, Jushin Liger versus Brian Pillman. At number 75 from Uncensored 1997, Dean Malenko versus Eddie Guerrero in a no disqualification match. At number 74 from Super Brawl 3, Sting versus Vader in the White Castle of Fear match. At number 73 from Starrcade 1992, also Vader versus Sting in the King of Cable final. At number 72, also from Starrcade 1992, Shane Douglas and Ricky Steamboat versus Barry Windham and Brian Pillman. And at number 71, Sting versus the Great Muta from Starrcade 1989. So there you go. 30 down, 70 to go. And I'm looking ahead at next week's matches, Dr. G, 70 to 61. We got some juicies. We got some very juicy ones.
You know, because this thing started back last year, so, and, you know, so much happened in this year, so.
Yeah.
It's nice to revisit some of the stuff.
And we got a couple of 80s matches next week, including one that I think, including one match that I think your host of Croc and Roll will find very interesting. So.
Willie.
It's a little hint, yes. So. That is this week's episode. A little quickie. I don't know how long it is. I can't get this. I'm trying to get the Skype open. Breaking the fourth wall here. I can't see how much the clock is. But seems like a very brisk episode of the NWA Saturday.
Screw that wall. Break the freaking wall down. Who cares?
Break the walls down. Break down the walls.
That's right. We need a Jericho song going on.
Well, I believe Jericho is going to be. Is Jericho on our show next week? Let's see. Well, not him, but. Oh, we do have a. There will be. Just looking ahead, there will be a Jericho match next week. So, just to let you know. All right. No, there's no Savage. We will see. I don't think we've got any Savage yet.
Freak you.
Have we got any Savage so far yet? Let me see. Did we mention Savage? I think we did. If not, I know we've got a few Savages coming up further up the list.
Yeah, but your man needs to be on there, Scott.
That's pretty great.
Elizabeth!
Anyway, so Dr. G, you can find him at Dr. G PTB on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at PTB Podfather. Great shows on the PTB Wrestling Network. We got a busy week this week. Of course, the next episode of Pro Wrestling Love will drop this weekend. Marty and Justin continue their GWCW ballot countdown. So keep off of that. New episode of the Place Be podcast will be this coming week. JR and I with a new guest. Another guest making his debut. We'll be doing the October 28th, 1991.
I'm coming MSG back on again, you know.
You will be coming. You'll be on. Your slot is locked in down the line.
Be the highest downloaded show.
Of course, because it's you.
Of all time.
Yeah. Are you going to do the whole show talking like Savage?
Yeah.
Could you imagine? I give this 3.25. We also have, there'll be a new episode next week of Highway to the Impact Zone, I think. Yeah, new Highway to the Impact Zone next week, as well as, of course, your second episode of NWA Croc and Roll. The moved main event from this week, it will be next week. We'll preview the Rumble, etc. So we're getting into the best time of wrestling, January to April. I just wish we had more people, but in the stand.
Me too.
Hopefully we get there soon. Have a great week, everybody. Stay safe. Be good to each other. He is the doctor. You are not.
Ooh, yeah. Chill.
I have nothing for that.